Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pennies Going in Raw is a production of iHeartRadio. The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy!
On this episode of Pennies Going in Raw, we discuss technical analysis with our special co-host, Adam Silver Trades, a.k.a. The Commish.
You find out life's this game of pennies.
Oh, you guys know we only have a 40% runner. Hello? 40% right is a f***ing killing.
We've been compliant for too long. It's time we go to war.
I don't have a Roth.
Q knows so much about the market that his brain doesn't have enough room for grammar.
Hey, who told me about IDEX? It's going up a shit ton now.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%.
You asked the exact same question with two words different.
It's like, f***, man, I just got dick whipped for like 20%, and now that f***er's up like 50.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
I'm just making this voice memo to call out unusual whales to a fight.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Pennies.
Going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity of Dips,
and Hugh Honey.
Produced by Vinny
and Christian.
Let's go, baby.
For any of the new listeners that are here for the Back to the Basics, this is post-recording. The first 30 minutes or so is pretty jargoned up, and we're going to try to explain it. So if you're new, you don't know that much about technical analysis, skip to
29 minutes,
and you can listen to that part first for a little explanation. Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going in Raw. Today is Sunday, August the 7th, and today we have on our close personal friend, Adam Silver Trades, a.k.a. The Commish, what we'll be calling him today. Big technical analysis guy. How's it going, man? Thanks for joining us.
Going great. Happy to be on here. And, you know, I like the lines on the chart, so I'm happy to talk some TA.
All right, for sure. Well, the way we always start this podcast, since we're going to treat you more of as a co-host and not a... Just a guest telling you your story. We always start with this week in the market. And with SPY this week, it really seemed like it didn't really leave that 410 to 415 range. And we've been used to seeing it go from 380 to 360 back to 390 all in a week. You know, what do you guys think is like the main catalyst in this, like not seeing as much volatility this week?
Yeah, so I mean, we jump back into that end of May, beginning of June range, right? Where it was just that brutal chop for about 7 to 8 days. We're right back there. And it's very interesting to me to see if we get chewed up and spit out of that or if we can break above, because that would be a huge sign for bulls, obviously, over that kind of 417 range.
Yeah, and to your point about that, is that I think that right now it, you know, as you said, is that this is really critical spot for us because this would effectively break this downtrend. You know, we some people would say, depending on what time frame you're looking at, would say that we broke it and we're now inside a upper channel. However, to me, I always like to do, you know, downward downward patterns and then also horizontal. And so a break of 417.50 would effectively break us out of that range. Now, the interesting part to me and something that I always enjoy looking at, and this comes back to the book that started me in stocks, The Complete Turtle Trader, is about moving averages and where they're pointed. Now, for the last, I'll say, last 3 months, all the moving averages, your 10, your 20, your 50, your 200, were all pointing down. Now that we're recording this week, you have the 50 starting curling up. You have the 20 completely, the 20 and the 10 looking at the moon, and the 50 is stagnant and kind of just hanging out there at that key level of 417.50, which is really interesting to me. And then, so that's on the daily chart. And then when I look at a smaller time frame chart, like the 180-day 4-hour, the pattern from, and the commission just talked about this, the pattern from, what was that, the middle of June or the beginning of June, the pattern looks close to identical when I look at the 7 to 8 candles. You know, it's pretty much just two green candles, two red candles, two green candles, two red candles, just staying inside that range. And we touch both sides of the range about 3 times. Now, I don't know, and I'm not going to speculate. It's just something that I think is really interesting to the point that you first made. And the fact that, like I said, is that the 50-day moving average is right at that key spot.
Mm-hmm. Even more significant, right? And I've spent some time since close just kind of, you know, on Friday, just looking into some stuff and seeing how far from the bottom are we on certain names? What are the shapes looking like? You know, we've had some weird events. Obviously, we have CPI up here next week, but I want to mention just some odd things that I noticed. The last 2 times AMC, and bear with me here, last 2 times AMC's run 18% or more, and that was March 28th, May 27th, and then Friday. Now, if you look at Apple on those days, those were the peaks on Apple.
And just right? To clarify, is this your tinfoil hat theory you were talking to us about before the podcast started?
It could possibly be, but the point here being is euphoria may be peaking right now.
Yeah.
That's kind of my speculation here. I mean, I'm always neutral, right? I'm posting a watch list. It can go up or down, right?
Yeah.
Neutral bias, but I'm seeing, you know, I feel like there's a lot of euphoria right now. It's kind of odd. And then if you go look at Tesla, around April 5th, had a big day to the downside, minus 5%, kind of that big breakdown candle leading the way down, which we also got on Friday. So granted, it was a reaction to the split vote, but I think there are some very, very interesting patterns that are unfolding here.
So question, and I just want your thoughts on this. The one thing that I find really interesting, and it kind of reminds me of 2020, 2021, is that the fundamentals don't matter currently. You know, like I'll say maybe 3 weeks ago when SPY was at, you know, 370, it was like, oh, okay, like 330 is what matters from, like, you know, price to earnings ratio, you know, different things like this. You know, we printed so much money. And then now that we've rallied, what is it, 50 points from bottom, you know, it's almost like, oh, the economy doesn't matter, the macro doesn't matter, it's the price action. And I totally agree with that. But to see the way that the overall investor and the overall retail trader, to see the mindset take a drastic shift, you know, more than once, it kind of, to your point about it feels like euphoria is peaking, you know, it kind of plays into that in my mind a little bit, you know, to myself, like, you know, I didn't want to buy it. I didn't want to buy it 395, you know, like I felt like we needed a pullback. And I still feel like even if we go higher to break that 417, to break that 50-day moving average, we're going to need a little bit more than this absolutely overextended rally. And so I think that, you know, I saw a tweet that said, you know, fundamentals don't matter, macro doesn't matter. And, you know, I kind of, and this was on a Thursday, and I was like, Huh. That's really interesting because, you know, I feel like 3 weeks ago, everybody was talking about, oh, like we need, you know, 2008. This is what happened. And, you know, the economy is this and stuff like that. So I find it interesting to your point about euphoria peaking.
Quick little interruption real quick. Y'all have used the word euphoria a ton. I know we just went over stock jargon last episode, but that one wasn't involved. You guys want to touch in or do should they just use context clues?
Yeah, like I the way that I think of euphoria, if I'm going to put a synonym on it, it's buy the dip with your eyes closed. You know, yeah. Like that's kind of like when I think about.
I thought it was where high schoolers did a bunch of drugs and were. I'm thinking of the TV show. My bad. Fucking damn it.
But to your point, it was a good point to bring up. And to me, honestly, we can use these two interchangeably. And Kamish and I have probably texted about this 5 times in the past 2 days, was that it truly feels like buy the dip with your eyes closed is working across the board. Across the board the last week. And so when I think of euphoria, that's what I think of. Like, oh shit, the market got down on bad jobs.
So all of 2020 and the first half of 2021 was just all euphoria.
It feels like a glimpse of that.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'll speak on that. I'll say some.
Yeah. Speak to them.
So how I feel about euphoria, honestly, it's just with everybody I talk to, it's just close your eyes and throw a dart at the dartboard. And as long as it's calls, you'll make money, right? That's the way that I think of euphoria. And also to add on to that, all bad news is good news. I texted Hugh this, you know, plenty of times. It's like, you know, just remember bad news is good news, guys. You know,
Publicity is good publicity. Gets that ticker out there.
Oracle aggressively laying off, you know, hundreds of employees. Rip it, right? You know,
great, dude. More money to go around for the people still there.
Exactly. And just to put some numbers on stuff, something that I noticed, Tesla from March 14th to April 1st, up 53%. Okay. Tesla June 17th to last week, up 52%. Exactly. Microsoft from March 14th-ish. To March 30th, where that peak was, up 15%. Microsoft from July 12th, July 26th, up to last week, was exactly 15% as well. So if you want to put kind of some quantification on it, you know, it's interesting to see similarities.
Yeah, and I think, well, Mitch, you want to touch on that real quick? What he said?
No. I personally loved, finding patterns like that, because to me it I'm a big, like, I like to believe inside, like, institutions control everything, like five men and women are controlling the vast majority of the wealth inside the world.
So it's probably still five men.
So to my point to that is that
statistically, probably five men.
Yes. However,
listen to a lot of Andrew Tate recently. Sorry.
To your point about that, you know, that's where, you know, like, algorithms come into it. And, you know, algorithms are all programmed days, months, weeks in advance to react off certain things. So I wouldn't be surprised if, like you said, is that these similarities are completely algorithmic programmed to, you know, sell it down, buy the dip a little bit on lower volume, which we've seen on this rally being lower volume, to then sell back down again, or, you know, things of that nature. And again, I understand that, you know, Kamish and I and Dan, we all trade, you know, what's in front of us, and I won't bet the house. However, like I said, is that I do believe that a rally needs to come. And at the end of the day, although the economy, what's going on inside the economy doesn't feel like it matters, the VIX being almost sub 20, I think, is ridiculous. You know, at the end of the day, we still have more our economy is built on debt, no matter which way you want to look at it. And so that being said, at least the VIX should be a little bit higher, in my opinion.
Is the economy kind of like just another, everything that bad happens there is just another straw to the camel's back, and we're just waiting for the one that fucking breaks it.
Well, I mean, we thought the pandemic was going to be the one to break it. That is like, you know, 3 weeks later, we're back at
this is a strong camel. This one's got a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, listen, if the pandemic that the pandemic didn't break it, you know, that, and that's why I think that it's really interesting. I mean, the fact that you know, we're saving less as Americans, less than $5 on every 100, and this goes back to the jobs report that came out Wednesday. Now, and this is something we've been talking about a lot. The labor market, it lags basically what the Federal Reserve does. It lags between 6 to 8 months. So the Federal Reserve, or let's even take like the administration saying, you know, hey, listen, we're going to raise rates and control inflation aggressively because the labor market is strong. Those two don't coincide, because what the Federal Reserve does, raising rates, inherently brings, you know, raises unemployment rates, and that is how the labor market now becomes, you know, weaker or not as strong. And so that's where, you know, it kind of comes back to, I don't love when it's like, oh, we're raising rates because the labor market is strong. The labor market will weaken because we raise rates, and that's what we're starting to see as of the new jobs report. So and then you know, of course, the market, and Kamish, I want your opinion on this. Of course, you know, it's one of those things where the market is forward looking. So when the Federal Reserve, what was it, 2 or 3 weeks ago, or a week ago at this point, says we believe that we can get inflation under control and that CPI, or, you know, inflation has peaked, that's one of those things where I'm like, great, fantastic. If that's the truth, fantastic. However, if inflation does see a higher tick, that's where I think we could get,
we
like
hate
a halt
broken
down day.
Promises.
Yeah, that's literally like, you know, like we promised inflation has peaked. If we don't peak the next one, and now the labor market's starting to weaken, that's where I think we could potentially see ourselves inside like a halt down day.
Okay, but here's the question I asked you. Did you not think that going into last month?
I felt like, and I still feel like, the Federal Reserve is still walking a tiptoe line with what they say. And I had to bring up my notes, but the one thing that I noticed about this was that Powell really switched from, like, when I say tiptoe in the line, I mean, like, you know, something along the lines of like, we believe that we can have a soft landing, to now it feels like we are going to have a soft landing. We are going to get inflation sub 6% this year, like, you know, sub 5%. I mean, I think in March he said they won inflation to sub 2.5% by the end of the year. That's impossible.
They've been up in the ante every time. It starts like, we will never, then it's like, we might, then we'll probably, we'll get
and
a
now
soft
it feels,
landing. Now it's like, yeah, oh, everything's good.
And now it feels like, you know, us 100% saying inflation has peaked. You know, like, inflation has peaked. I felt like that was the message of the last Fed meeting, where before, like I said, it really felt like they were tiptoeing that line. So now I feel like if we, and also the one thing that they said inside this past meeting that I felt they hadn't said, was that they believe we can start to go back to the 25 basis points sooner rather than later of raising rates. And that's something that I felt was, you know, we really didn't hear anything like that before. And that, to me, feels like the difference between the last two meetings, and almost not over-promising, because, again, if it works out like that, fantastic. If the next, you know, inflation reading is 6.5%, great. You know what I mean? Like, fantastic. We'll be at all-time high. Hell, we'll be at 500. However, if we do peak higher, everything that we just, that the Fed just talked about, and the entire plan that's been laid out since March, it now just goes out the window, and now we start needing to be super aggressive, which, you know, I mean, we know how that goes. So that's what I feel is the difference. That's a long winded way of saying that's what I feel is the difference.
Right. So last time, okay, two things, you know, two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth, right? That technically, right, we read that as good news.
Yeah.
Bad news is good news, right? So, and then I always think to myself, I guess the bad CPI print, like the worst one that kind of kicked this off, was June, right? And then July was terrible. But I tweeted in July, I said, you know, here's my FOMC preview. It's right, 50, lower than expected, rip it. 75, expected, oh, but inflation will end soon, rip it. 100, unexpected. That really sucks. But inflation's going to go away yesterday, so we'll rip it anyways, right?
Yeah.
You even said, Hugh, you know, markets are forward looking. So it's all about how people want to interpret this.
100%. And the one thing that I'll say to that is that that's why I feel like prior to July, it was something along the lines of, hey, this is the plan that we have in place. We will act accordingly. Now it feels like July, they put the stamp on it. Inflation's peaked. So now if the next CPI or, you know, the next inflation reading is higher, now the plan and the promise that we made, it's not a we will react accordingly. It is, oh shit, we said that inflation peaked. Now it didn't. So now I think that one, what that does is that loses confidence inside the Federal Reserve. If we had confidence, whatever confidence we had kind of goes out the door, because now it's like, oh shit. Like
does not anyone only, know how to fix this shit?
Yeah. Like, are we going to have to, is everybody going to have to, live off, you know, are we going to have like a famine, like, you know, stuff like that, to where it's like the only way to truly bring down costs is if we build up supply to a insane level. Or it's so one, I feel like we could potentially lose that confidence. And then the second thing is that, you know, rates, if you look at the 80s, well, since the 80s, we really haven't been in double digit rates since the 80s. And I mean, like when I talked to like my aunts and my uncles, you know, they had signed like 15% mortgages, which to us, 5% feels fucking
absurd. When your aunts and uncles call, they're probably like, fucking damn it. Hey, go get our financial plan from 40 fucking years ago, Steve. Mitch is calling. He wants to know how much we had to put down on a house back then. Put it on his Twitter or something.
But see, that's the thing, is that part of these conversations, it's like, oh shit, like, yeah, like we did do 18%. Like that was like my answer, like reaction, like, yeah, we did do 18%. And so to back in that time, 18% wasn't that crazy. You know, it was like, ah, fuck, like, all right, it is what it is, but at least we have a home. Now we're like 7%. Are you crazy? Like, I don't want 7%, but we truly do have double from here, 100% move up from here inside interest rates. And that could be what it takes potentially if we do tick higher. And so I guess my point to all of this is that I think that since we've made such a bold stance forward looking this last meeting, that if we do see a print higher than expected, that will lose most confidence inside the system. And at that point, I think that's when, you know, kind of the non-controlled selling and kind of like that panic selling is when we might see it. Because again, if we look back at, you know, economic cycles and recessions, typically the first wave the first wave of the housing crisis, so everybody that needed to sell their 401ks to pay for, you know, whatever, you know, that was bad, but that wasn't as ugly as the real rug pull, when the average investor who was just worried about losing the gains that they had made started to pull out their 401ks, because then it's like 1,000 mice trying to go through the same hole. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And to tie this back to TA, it's very interesting that where we are going into this week ahead, Hugh, is just absolutely like, this is the most interesting spot we could possibly be in from a technical perspective.
Totally agree.
And I want to be completely clear, like everything that I said about patterns earlier, I'm totally neutral. I'm not calling a top, I'm not calling a bottom, because that's how you get into toxic Twitter.
100%.
But us situated here at SPY 413, right? You remember there's that 407 to 417 range that ugly chop that we traded in late May, early June. If we somehow break above 417, we've conquered that, right? We're still in this channel, this parallel channel, huge uptrend going up, right? I always say the steeper the trend up, the steeper the downfall. Gonna come way quicker. But if we can break that 417, it would have to happen this week, right? Given the channel that we're seeing, yeah. You know, that proves we've conquered this level. We probably have quick room to 430, no doubt, before maybe even 440, then kind of taking a little breather there. However, if we reject this 417 again and head back down below 407, not only are you breaking out of that channel, which is probably going to give you a steep downfall, but you've made a big double top right there at 417. Yeah. It's going to make it even tougher to get back over.
I 100% with you. And the one thing that I'll say to you, or the one thing that I'll add on to that is that personally, from a bull perspective, I want some kind of retracement on this rally. Like, we really haven't had a massive retracement since, July or something since the Fed meeting. And so I personally wouldn't mind, you know, maybe like a little dip to honestly, like nothing crazy, 405, 403, something like that. But then on good volume, come back up, break over this 413 again, and then go for that 417. Because me personally, if we break through that 417, yes, we're going to see probably a pretty big move up. Like you said, pretty fast and pretty violent because of all the breakout buyers and you know, just in general, the algorithms, you know, stuff like that. However, I think that if it's not on, you know, I'll call it like a $1 billion volume, billion volume week, you know, something like that. You know, when we trade, you know, like a billion shares, I'll want to see us trade like 400 million shares or something. You know, I think that would, you know, kind of bring that volume in, and for like the volume profiles, you know, give like a really good support on that level. Where if we see, you know, a break above 417 and we explode to the upside, and let's just say we hit 423, and that's not on, you know, I'll just break it even, call it like 500 to 600 million in volume on the week on SPY, then that's one of those ways where if we then, you know, that candle turns into like a shooting star, and you know, like it completely retraces, that's, again, to your point, you know, that's going to be a tough reject, and that's going to be on super low volume, and we can cut back down through that really fast. And so if we do break above 417 on lower volume, I won't be a buyer. And if anything, I'll be looking for a parabolic overshoot to then at least short back to at least a little bit of a dip. But like I said, me personally, I would like to see a little bit of consolidation on really good volume. You know, this week was actually a pretty good volume, and especially the past few days were decent volume. And so that's what I would like to continue to see for the next move up, especially because, again, that 50-day moving average, which is always a pain in the ass to get above, and we've rejected plenty of times inside the past few months. I mean, we haven't even been above the 50 since January, February, March, April 22nd, and we broke above, and we were barely above for, you know, for a month. And so that's why, me personally, you know, I want to see really good volume, really good consolidation for a break above, and then above that, I want to see, again, more volume, more consolidation for the next move up. Because realistically, if we're able to base really nicely at that 417 with really good volume and base above that 50-day moving average, then realistically, it's going to take a lot to break down below that. And the next time that we test there, I'd probably be a buyer, you know, if we're looking at, you know, if we're in, you know, September, October, November, you know, let's just say that we did hit that 440 and we retrace back to that 417, I'd probably be a buyer there, you know, for like a higher low kind of pattern up.
Oh, big time. And when we've, like you said, the volume profile, we've put in a ton of volume in this 407 to 417 range. And even, man, if we get, you know, it's very thin volume down to about 402, but I assume that June 9th to June 10th gap, right? That 402 to 394, just absurd gap. They're going to protect that. And if I, you know, from a bull's perspective, I want to see couple days of basing possibly there. And then you can get this maybe even looking like a cup and handle pattern, right? You can get this then base around 402, nice little push back up on higher volume, like you said, and then break out over 417. That would be the ideal situation for bulls, in my opinion. Also to get that little breather, you know, that we're talking about.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, guys. So going in back to our back to the basics is what we just did was quite the opposite. You hear all the 417s to 430 to 440 before cool off and stuff like what makes the 402 with volume prior to going to 417 like the bull's dream. I think starting off is and keep in mind, this is back to the basics. So can we kind of explain how y'all got to these numbers, what y'all saw? Obviously, besides just we're looking at a chart, we're looking at these EMAs. And kind of dive into, you know, the real basics of technical analysis.
Sure thing. So one thing that we mentioned was volume profile. And this is one of the most common questions that I get. Hugh, I don't know if you do too. But a lot of times you'll see volume bars on the y-axis of the chart. So the right side of the chart. And what that is just like volume on the bottom of the chart is volume over time, right? So just the amount of shares exchanged, hands traded, and during that period of time. Well, on that y-axis, that's usually whatever you have pulled up on your screen in the visual, you know, the visible range, the amount of shares traded at that price within the range that you have pulled up. So it's volume based on price. Now, what that can help you do is it can help you see, you know, are there areas where there was not much volume, you know, traded there? And the thesis there is if there's not much volume traded in a certain area, it'll usually move quicker through that area. And then conversely, if there's a lot of volume traded in a certain price area, like that 407 to 417 range that we've been talking about, you'll see those y-axis bars stick out further. Those are generally more choppy areas that are harder to get through.
Yeah, spot on. And just to bring it, and I'll even bring it down like a level lower, is that similar to how we talked about volume on Wednesday, volume is pretty much everything. You know, if we break out on really low volume, it's probably not going to hold. Similar to, you know, if we break down on really low volume, you know, a lot of times those are fake outs because all it takes is a little bit of volume inside the opposite direction to, you know, explode through that area. So, and I'll just play out two quick scenarios, you know, just to keep it really, really simple. So, you know, let's just say you're a long. And all of a sudden, you know, the stock that you're holding has, you know, let's just say that it typically trades 10 million shares per day. And it moves like 1.5% per day. Well, if on 500,000 shares, you know, is just immediately dumped into the bid and it moves down 3.5%, most people, the average investor, are going to freak out saying, holy hell, you know, 500,000 was just dumped into the bid, whether that be a sell, whether it be a short, something along those lines, but let's just call it a short. Well, now all it will take to bring that back up, hypothetically, of course, is it'll only take about 1 million in volume to not only get back up to that level, but now that short that is in there is now going to be back to his average after seeing a massive red candle. So now if you have another 500,000 in volume come in to the long side, you know, now you're going to start squeezing that short. And so what, as we talked about, is that what we know about shorts is that they have a margin equity and they can get called in at any time. So typically you have to hold a certain margin requirement. And if you get over that, and if that level goes under, you know, let's call it like 50%, then you'll get squeezed. And so typically what I found is that what ends up happening with some of these shorts is that they'll get in there, they'll get big, and then let's just say, you know, if they're up 3% and then it goes back to their average, they'll add more. And then if they're down 3%, they'll add more, you know, and then all of a sudden that margin requirement continues to go up because they keep adding to the position. So now when they had 12% of breathing room, they now really only have 6% of breathing room. And that's one of those ways where if now that big short has to cover, you're going to see now go from a, you know, a low volume dip to a parabolic squeeze up. And so that's, you know, the one scenario to the downside on low volume. And to the upside, again, same thing, is that if, and this is where, you know, it goes back to that 417 level on SPY, if we were to break out there on really low volume, 8 out of 10 low volume breakouts fail and retrace. And so what that means is that, and it just comes down to statistics, okay? If I tell you that 8 out of 10 times that I throw this ball, if I throw this ball, not, whoa, my grandma's about to be shit. If I throw this ball really lightly 8 out of 10 times, I'm not going to hit the target. But then inside the same token, if I say, if I throw this ball really hard 8 out of 10 times, I'm going to hit the target. Same thing with stocks. You know, like I said, light volume 8 out of 10 times, it's going to fail and retrace back. Heavy volume, it's going to break through and hold that prior key level of support.
I didn't know where you want to go with there. Okay, so obviously we talked about volume a lot last time, and for anyone this morning, he just means more people trading the shit or less people trading the shit. Is there any point where are you looking for? We're like, hey, this volume needs to happen here. Why do you look for certain places, and how can you use, you know, graph charts and EMAs to sort of find where you want volume to occur? And then how much volume exactly are you looking for as opposed to the low volume breakouts? Because I feel like volume and technical analysis kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, I can add on this one. So first off, there's another term that we mentioned. And if we're keeping it to the basics, like Dan said, we talked about this channel. Yeah. So if you want to draw a line from the bottom wick, you're looking at SPY, you want to draw a line from the bottom wick on July 14th at 370. And then you draw that up and to the right, connecting it to the bottom on July 26th and then on August 5th, right? That's the bottom of your channel. The top of your channel, you can take another line and draw from, you know, kind of the top of July 19th and then connect that to the others, connect that to the top of July 29th and just extend it upwards. So you kind of, you're situated with this parallel channel, right? You can see it touches the bottom of the channel. It'll bounce off.
You're kind of just drawing outside the lines, essentially.
Mm-hmm. So Dan, to add to Dan's point, where you want to see that volume is if you're getting, you know, if you have this channel that you're kind of following upwards, you know, it kind of acts as a bit of a support to hold the trend. If you're testing the bottom of that channel, you want to see the volume pile in if it wants to keep going back up and reach the top of the channel again.
And that's just ensuring it doesn't fail. People wanting to buy it whenever it's at that low point of it.
Right. Got to have demand step in at that pivotal point, right? And another thing that we mentioned earlier was 402 on SPY. And on June 10th, that was the low of day, right? And then there was a massive gap down, and a gap being where price closed one day, opened completely different the next day. We need, as bulls, you need buyers to step in there kind of at that key level. to protect it, because if they don't, it can then easily fall through to that, you know, through that gap, since there's low volume traded in that area. But that's another place, you know, 402, that's a key pivotal spot where you want to see an increase in volume. You want to see a quick, you know, ideally a wick off the bottom, and then a quick push back up to the upside, really showing confidence in the buyers and demand there.
So obviously you can trade inside of a channel. What if you lose the demand at the bottom of the channel, or if the bulls go crazy at the top of the channel, what does that usually follow up with?
So if you lose it, you know, you might see high volume selling, which is just what me and Hugh were talking about. You know, if that channel breaks down, maybe it's a CPI print, you know, maybe there's some sort of catalyst that causes it. Maybe it's Taiwan, right? you know, you get a breakdown out of that channel. Sometimes it'll come back up and test that channel. And then if that fails, you might see just high increasing volume to the downside. And that's confirming that move to the downside. Likewise with the upside, if you get a break out of that channel to the upside, which is kind of hard to believe here, being that it's already such a very, you know, the angle of the channel is so aggressive. But if you do, you want to see it on high volume, confirming that the conviction in the move to the upside or the downside.
Do you have any of like basic favorite setups or ones that helped you along the way, kind of help you become like the technical analysis guru? If someone's looking, they're like, hey, fundamental analysis wasn't for me. I hate Mitch. Like, doing DD sucks. Like, where's the best place just to, like, easiest one to start with? Obviously, you have, you know, so many when it comes to, like, Head and Shoulders, fucking reversals, everything in the book. What would you even kind of start at?
I think probably the easiest ones to recognize and play are sort of symmetrical triangles, which some you can even call them flags, but usually it's kind of a mix or of a support or resistance. You get a horizontal line and then you get kind of a trend line, and it's getting it cornered. It just keeps going more and more into that the corner of some triangle. I don't know if it's called symmetrical triangle, but you know, you get it
going. Yeah, symmetrical and asymmetrical. Trust me, I did my TA research for some chick with 600 YouTube views earlier today.
Dude, I don't even know what the different candles are called. I don't, you know. What's a doji?
Dude, I always thought one of my like conspiracy theories is if no one knew about all of these technical analyses, would they still work? Like, if no one knew that a double bottom was bullish, would a double bottom still be bullish?
hang on. This is where my tinfoil hat comes in. And it goes back to what we talked about the institutions and programming different buys and sells and stuff.
You look like Shaq holding a fucking notebook right now, dude. What is that, notebook for babies?
No, this is I write in this shit like my to-do list every day.
You can fit like six words in it.
Yeah, I keep it inside my pocket. It's a pocket book.
I keep my to-do list like super minor, so I can't put more than three things on it.
It's 80 pages, right? all right, but so what I was saying was that I forget what I was saying.
Is that how I was saying double bottoms wouldn't be bullish if they weren't double bottoms were bullish?
So my point to that is that I believe that when, you know, a fund manager programs buys and stuff, they just become that double bottom. You know, if they program to buy, you know, a stock at $52, well, every time that comes down to 52, he's just sitting there like a fucking massive whale with, you know, a billion on the bid or, you know, whatever. And then basically he would just become the double bottom, and all you need is a little bit of volume to the upside, you know, people hitting the ask for it to work. So my only point to that is that I still do think it would work to some degree. Now, do I think like some of the other crap would work? No. Like do I think like the 9 EMA bounce would work? No. But again, is that if you have enough people to your point who use the 9 EMA and know about the 9 EMA, you know, then yes, it will work, because effectively they're just becoming the bid.
Yeah, dude, there's a problem. I forget. It was somewhere in Europe like 100 years ago where these nuns, I think it was nuns, just started fucking meowing. One of them did. And then they all just started meowing and it just lasted forever. I don't know if that's relevant at all, but there's a little fact for y'all. Okay, so I don't even know if you finished his questions. We just fucking dove into some other bullshit. Did you have anything else for that section?
No. Me, favorite setup? I like when, you know, you get a support or resistance mix with the trend line. Basically, that's kind of my bread and butter.
All right, cool. So before we get into our question, we do have one more thing for you. We do want to kind of hear about your trading journey. Like what year it started, if you had other shit going on that you had to deal with and how you dealt with that as you were trading, et cetera, et cetera. How much money you lost at the beginning, all of it.
Yeah, for sure. Balance is incredibly important. And obviously we all go through, you know, different things in our life while we're going on this trading journey. And trading can be a very taxing thing, whether it be mental or physical capital. Right. And so I started trading, you know, late 2018, early 2019. I'm pretty sure the first stocks I traded were ACB and Hexo, you know, when they're running like crazy, you know, getting into penny stocks. Of course, that's where we all start. And then options shortly after. And then you always get that first taste of victory. You get that huge win to make you think that that's how it always is. And I remember there was just I had spy puts on a massive downside day, and they printed, and I was like, oh my gosh, like this can happen every day, right? It doesn't happen every day. there's chop, and so you know you lose a lot of money.
We saw it this week.
What?
And we saw it this week.
Absolutely, man. And so, you know, in the process, you know, you can blow 4 or 5 accounts. I mean, I've probably blown plenty, more than I'm happy to admit. But then in the process there, you learn along the way, you know, how important it is to follow your rules, right? Because if you don't follow your rules, or if you don't have rules to begin with, start by just writing stuff down on a piece of paper. Start off by documenting past themes, past mistakes, and see if there's any replicating themes.
Yeah, that pop up. I'm losing money on every fucking one. What's the issue?
Yeah. Well, am I bag holding? You know, is my problem I'm not selling? Is my problem I'm not taking base hits for winners? I'm not, you know, I'm hoping for that 100%. I'm not, you know, being content with 25% and I'm letting it go red, right? You know, if you see something that's recurring, you know, you're able to correct that. So over time, creating a system, creating an edge, you'll hear people say the word edge a lot. You know, what's kind of your advantage in the market? What's your bread and butter? And for me, that's kind of analyzing the daily ranges of stocks, and then playing those moves based on sort of a support and resistance based on the daily range. And once I kind of decided to myself, said, hey, this is my thing. I'm not going to listen to, you know, anybody else's ideas on Twitter. I can do this myself.
Like,
and so that's my goal, is to empower people to do that themselves.
Yeah. So it'd be like Hugh's edge is like DD, your edge is like options. Nancy Pelosi's edge is like having a husband and the,
like having insider information,
yeah,
purview to everybody else in the world.
Sorry, dude. Yeah. I just had to
deciding the massive bills.
Nancy Pelosi's, yeah, always catching strays on this podcast.
Yeah. Nancy's ducking and weaving every 5 seconds here. All right, so Kamish, one thing that that we like to ask is, because I feel like personally, as I've gone along my trading career, I talk way less about my great trades and more about the fuck I messed up and stuff like that. But the one thing that I want to ask you is, do you have a big red day ritual? And what I mean by that is that, you know, you have, because we've all had massive red days where you're like, holy shit, like I broke all my rules. You know, I probably got smoked a little bit on the account. Is there anything that you do? Mine is typically to take an edible and go for a walk and you know, and stuff like that, and
big
just
be
away
now,
from the
huh?
charts. Well, kinda, I guess. I take
your
the
money in a weed company, so you just gotta fucking smoke it off.
So Sorry, god.
Get heated like that.
What do you call it? So, Kamish, do you have a big red day ritual?
I'll say the first thing is to journal what I said. You know, if there's certain rules that I broke, the first response will be, okay, I'm going to write down what rules I broke, and then I'm not going to look at it, right?
Okay.
I'm not going to look at it until the next day or the next time I feel like trading.
Okay.
Just so that I have this running notes list of times that, you know, when I have a red day that's bigger than I want, I can go look back, and if I'm saying the same things, I need to make sure that I'm emphasizing those things, you know, every day, just re-emphasizing. Anyway, so from a journaling perspective, that's that. Then it's usually followed by eat a good meal, you know, in Austin via 313. Love that place. Some deep dish pizza, you know, and then get an early bedtime.
Yeah.
Dude, whenever you said, what do you do on like a bad day? I heard and I was like, I jerk off on mine too. But no, I said journal. So obviously, you know, options, you know, how did you transition from the pennies to the options? I know it's like, it seems risky, especially when you first start and you see all the Wall Street Bets bullshit. Like, how did you transition, and then how did you kind of make it less risky and kind of avoid those losses where you don't have to journal? I mean, I don't journal.
Yeah. I would say the transition happened when I just realized I don't have the patience to wait for catalysts.
Gotcha.
I need the, okay, I can do this every day and I can replicate it. And you can settle. Once you realize you can build a plan, you can take 20% gains, you know, a couple times a day. And that, you know, with options, that can build a small account even very, very quickly. And so the transition, I feel like, happened. I mean, it almost happened half a year in, but, you know, you don't really build and establish your plan until you lose some money. You pay that market tuition and you find out what doesn't work for you so that you can then know what does work for you.
For sure. And do you have anything that you would give advice to, like some of these newer guys doing options? They may have been doing it a couple months. They have their big wins, have their big losses, but how can you manage to not make your losses as big whenever you see these people and you just keep cutting them, especially in options? I mean, you'll see it go down. You're like, okay, cut 20%. And then an hour later, they're up 150. And it's such like a double-edged sword on that one where it's like, oh, be patient, but also don't be a fucking idiot.
It's tough, man. What I'd say is mentally, don't get too high with the highs or too low with the lows. Because in options, you can easily lose a lot of money really quick. You have a bad day, you can't get down in the dumps because then you're just going to blow the rest of your account. And if you have a big win, don't you dare get confident, right? Because then you're about to give it all back. And when it comes to risk management, when you're actually in a position, don't lose more than you should. Always utilize your stop losses. Sometimes what I'll say is even think about the worst case scenario. When you first enter a position, you'd be like, man, this would really suck if it got this far.
Atomic bomb. Oh.
Plug that in as a stop loss. Because if you don't plug it in as a hard stop, you're probably going to see it go there and then self-negotiate, and you're going to let it go even further.
You have to have a mind of a soldier and a fucking warrior spirit if you're a mental stop-loss guy, and you're going to fucking heed by it.
Exactly.
So, one thing to Kamish's point is that me, I'm not the type of guy to go for like 3-day out options. Like that's just that really has never been my game. And recently, you know, I've
same
been
day
trying
expo or bust.
Yeah. So as of recently, I've been trying to move into, you know, shorter time frames, and like even Friday, I texted like the commission. I was like, I like NVIDIA here, you know, for 191 to 192. I took same day or like 3 day out NVIDIA calls, and it was like only 20% to my target, and I was up 15%. And I was like, holy shit.
Sweet,
I was
right?
I was like, this is fucking ridiculous. So what I do? I'm like, because typically, you know, when I'm taking 3 weeks out, you know, I'm looking for like 5-10% move on the option, but this is, you know, NVIDIA moving
crack.
A percent and a half. Yeah, you know what I mean? So NVIDIA moving like 0.2%. I was up 50%. I was like, holy shit. So me, you know, I cut 60% there. They go like 200%.
I'm but,
like,
I mean, that's the thing.
And I'm like, holy shit.
It's like for
I'm
options, like, if you'd be like, okay, I'll cut it at 20% down, but you can be up 20% in fucking 6 seconds after buying them, and you'll be like, oh, shit, I'll just keep it. 30 seconds later, you're like, fuck, I'm even. Like, dude, same day.
That's the thing.
Yeah, it's
not. I'm like, this shit is. I'm like doing the math. I'm like, bro, I could have just made my month. You know what I mean? Like, stuff like that. It's like, it's really wild. And so, Kamish, the question I'm trying to get out of you, and this is literally for myself, is that how do you personally, first off, do you take same day or do you like to go a little bit further out? That's my first question.
I usually will take weeklies up until Friday.
Okay.
And then I'll take next week.
You don't play lotto Friday, man? Pussy.
Sometimes, well, it depends. I would say maybe like 25% of my trades on Fridays are zeros.
Okay. So this brings me to my next question. And I'll even start this. So let's just say it's Thursday, it's midday, and you have a trade set up. And let's just say that you're taking that trade. You know, how do I know that if this trade takes longer than an hour or two, that the squeeze is going to be worth the juice? Is that the correct analogy?
You know what I'm saying? I don't know if that's ever been said before, but I like is a squeeze going to be worth the juice? That's fire.
And what I'm trying to what I'm trying to say by that, in case that doesn't make it clear, is that
I think it makes perfect sense. I think that may be one of the smarter fucking idioms you might have made. I mean, you say all the other ones wrong, so I mean, just making up one that makes sense is just a really big step in the right direction.
I've been working on it.
He went from crawling to sprinting in a fucking matter of episodes.
So, Kamish, does that make sense? You know, because one of the things I always worry about when I'm sitting inside these options that are expiring, and again, you know, I'm using Thursday as an example, but you know, that I'm always fucking worrying that the move will take longer than I want, and then I'm basically just going to be basically like losing money. So how do you handle that? And any tips for myself?
Right. First question I'd ask is, how much are you down?
Let's just say that literally the stock just hasn't moved. It's maybe the stock has moved, you know, down 0.2%, but it's pretty much just, you know, chilling in this range. You know, and like I said, though, is that I'm worried about the decay. You know, how do I kind of get over that decay worry? And do you have any tips? Like, are you going super far out of the money? Are you, you know, taking where your target is? You know, kind of walk me through some of that.
Yeah, Thursday midday or anything closer to expiration, you know, you get risky because it's got to happen, and it's got to happen now. If it goes away from your strike at all, you're going to see crazy decay. So say, just like you said, it's Thursday afternoon. You got 1.5 days left on this thing. You know, I'm going pretty close to the money, because if you go far out of the money and you get just an inch away from your, you know, your position, you'll see minus 20% instantly. It depends on the stock, obviously, but Thursday, I'm taking things that are maybe one or two strikes out. Obviously, you know, depends. But if it's not moving in your direction, probably with, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours left, or it breaks a key, say you're in calls and it breaks down below a key support, in the last, you know, 2 hours of the Thursday session, I'd probably ditch it. If it maintains, you know, kind of a support level into the last 2 hours, you can possibly get a nice little run into power hour sometimes. That's worth my gamble if it holds. But, you know, if you get a breakdown and you're in calls or a breakout in your inputs, you got to cut it instantly.
You need deodorant, Hugh? I saw you whiff your armpit and give a fuck.
I did. You see, the thing is that I really like these basketball jerseys, but it's kind of tight on my, you know, I wore this for the commish. It's kind of tight, and also it's really hot in my apartment. Dude,
thank God it fits my frail feminine body so well. Yeah. It's perfect.
It's really hot in my apartment. I mean, we got like 16-foot ceilings, and, you know, I don't have the air on. And so it is like
probably the same.
Scorching right now. But... Commish, to your point, okay, so keep it pretty close. You know, I want the move to happen pretty fast, and just keep like your stop loss pretty tight is pretty much what I gathered from that.
Yeah, if you're not, you know, if you're playing one, you know, if you're playing on Thursday, or if you're playing, you know, zero DTE or one DTE, you know, spy options, right? Because you can play those Monday, Wednesday, or Friday expiration. You know, if you're a day or two from expiration, you got to keep that stop loss in there, and you can't let it get out of hand. You know, never lose more than you should, because you're staring at minus 25%. It's super easy for you to negotiate with yourself and let that fall to negative 50, and it'll happen in a flash.
Definitely.
All right.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so our last section, as we're approaching an hour, we have... I got bongo drums. I never got to use them. I actually thought they were plant holders at first. but we do have a viewer question of the week. We have a bunch, and this one's from our friend Nick. Don't know if you want me to dox your last name, so I'll just call you Nick. Nick D. He said he's been trading for about 2 years now and getting the hang of things. How do you go about making a plan for taking a trade with an obvious setup or pattern on one time frame that isn't so obvious on another time frame? Do you like to be able to see the same pattern on multiple time frames for confirmation, or is one time frame enough? Thanks. I think we have just the guy to answer it appearing with us just today. What do you think about that, man? If you need me to repeat any of it, let me know.
Wow, this is an incredible question. And to be honest, I've never been asked this question.
We got smart listeners.
Exactly.
Shout out Nick.
Shout out Nick. Honestly, just dox his last name right here. So I'll give this guy a follow. Anyways, the first principle to really understand is on a bigger time frame, it's going to be more significant, right? A daily trend line or a daily triangle or bull flag is going to be more significant than a 5 minute one. You know, the lower you get down, the less significant. So if we understand that principle and we accept that as a given fact, start giving weight to whatever formation you're seeing across different time frames. So if you're seeing a very, very bullish pattern on a 5 or a 15 minute time frame, but say you notice on the daily it's coming into a massive downtrend line. For example, you know, you look at some of these Chinese stocks. I mean, I've been playing Baidu a lot recently, and sometimes, you know, they're just very gappy and odd. You'll see, you know, they'll follow it. They're kind of in a steep downtrend right now, but you'll have a huge down day, and then you'll have, you know, followed by a massive upswing, but it comes right back up to the trend line. So shorter term, 5, 10, 15 minute, maybe even hourly, you'll see, you know, these are really bullish signs. But if you're not zoomed out and you're looking at the daily chart and you're noticing, hey, this is just another trend line test, it could possibly come back down. You can't ignore that. So I'd say give weight to what you're seeing in the bigger time frames, and then compare that and say, okay, what's the hourly, the 15 minute telling me? And if they kind of disagree, I'm probably looking for another setup. I want to see something that at least gives me a general agreement in a certain direction.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. That makes total sense. I was just going to add on to it that so pretty much I won't look any, if I'm looking at the 5 minute, I really, you know, I might switch to the 15 minute to block out some of that noise a little bit, you know, and some of that liquidity creation. But other than that, you know, I that's kind of like where my confirmation lies, is between the 5 and or the 15. Or if I'm looking for, you know, a bigger swing, pretty much the 4 hour and the daily. So those are the two groups that I kind of, that's the way that I kind of group the two between. And that's where I like to, you know, kind of find that confirmation, if anything. But if I can just stick to one chart, that's what I typically like to do. And like I said, is that those four are pretty much my bread and butter. And then, you know, to the point about, you know, where Nick said, how do you go about making a plan for taking a trade with an obvious setup or pattern? Just that part aside, the way that I find confidence, not only inside my strategy, but inside the upcoming potential play, is that I want to be able to kind of foresight exactly what's happening and what's going to happen. So let's just say, you know, we talked a lot about today about double tops. And so something that one of the steps that I personally like is, let's take the 15 minute chart. If, you know, we, let's just say we have a gap down day, we come back up to a key level, we break down, and then we come back up again and we break down. That's a double top and failed follow through. That's something that I like to see. So if I'm looking short side, and like I said, is that I want to see us literally 3 hours before I take the trade, I'm saying, okay, I want to see us come up to price X, and then I want to see us come back down, hold support X, or the move is invalid, go back up, reject price X. If we get through, then, you know, that then the price is invalidated. I want to see us fail there, and then I'll enter my short position. And so that's not only my strategy, but if I'm calling the playbook 3 hours in advance, the move, then that just gives me even that much more conviction inside the play. You know, I talked about NVIDIA yesterday, and it was literally like, you know, I want to see it do this, I want to see it do that, I'll enter here, my stop loss is here, and I'm taking profit here. Now, I ended up taking profit way faster than I imagined. But again, is that, you know, that's part of me just, you know, starting to get used to shorter term dated options.
All right, guys. Well, that's an hour and 5 minutes on my side until the edits come. So you guys asked for it. There the fuck it is. Obviously, thanks a lot for joining us, Kamish. If you want to plug anything, let them know where to find you. We've had a blast, and of course, you're welcome back whenever.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on here. It's been great. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's just Adam Sliver Trade. It's Adam Silver, but the L and the I are flipped. Give me a follow and learn some levels. Learn to do stuff yourself. Last word I want to say is, you know, don't be a sheep. Be somebody who goes out of your way to make your own plan and make your own thesis, and take advantage of this process. Take advantage of the resources on Twitter. There's so much stuff on there. Learn and just own it. because that's the only way you're going to grow and be successful in trading.
All right. Hell yeah. Thanks to guys for listening. We'll see you Wednesday, and we love you. Bye.
Pennies Going in Raw is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.